Open your Bibles with me, please, to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. I want to read the passage that I think most succinctly provides the principles upon which this message I'm bringing today will be predicated. Begin reading in verse 15. Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits, not their rhetoric, I need to say that again, I can tell. Not by their rhetoric. By their fruits, their actions, ye shall know them. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works. And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. By their fruits, their actions, ye shall know them. This passage of Scripture is specifically attempting to warn us regarding false prophets. Men and women who pretend to be a minister of God. Men and women who pretend to be a spokesman for God. Men and women who tend to deliver a message from God. They have the appearance of a messenger of God. They present themselves as a messenger of God. They have the tapestry, the facade. They have the rhetoric of a minister of God. But they are in truth ravening wolves in sheep's clothing. They are pretenders. They are phonies. Their rhetoric is a lie. They are in truth the enemies of God and the enemies of God's people. And they seek to destroy the sheep of the pasture. That is the specific instruction that we have from our Lord here. He goes even further and talks to some of these would-be phony prophets by saying there's many people that are going to say, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? Lord, have we not done many wonderful works, maybe even miracles? Lord, have we not done all these things and said all these things for you? And then Jesus said, I'm going to say to them, depart from me. I never knew you. God knows the heart. See, we're limited and finite. All we can do is look at the exterior. God knows the heart. God knows who the phonies are. Sometimes it takes us a while to figure them out. It's because we do not have God's perspective and God's ability to look inside the heart and the soul of a person. So we hear their speech and we watch them and we make judgments and conclusions accordingly. And often our judgments and our conclusions are wrong, because the person who presented themselves to us as a saint or as a minister of God or a messenger of God or a good person or whatever, they were purposefully fooling us and hiding who they really are. And sometimes it takes us a while to figure that out. But the Lord knows. And the Lord will say to every single one of those false prophets, depart from me, I never knew you. So this is given to us as an instruction on how to discern these false prophets who walk around in sheep's clothing. And the basic criteria that the Lord uses for us to discern who these false prophets are is by their fruits ye shall know them. By their actions ye shall know them. Not by their words. Talk is cheap. Have you figured that out yet? I want to ask you to raise your hand if you're over 21, because some of you want us to think you're still under 21, even though we know you're not. But if you're over 21, have you figured this out? Talk is cheap. When we're younger, we believe everybody. And then somewhere in our maturation process as a youngster, we wake up one day or we go to bed at night on our pillow and we say to ourselves, he lied to me. And then in our innocence, we think, well, that's just the exception of the rule. He's just one of those people, but everybody else is honest. And then we get lied to again, and then we get lied to again, and then we get lied to again, and then we get lied to again. And then pretty soon we figure it out. Talk is cheap. It means nothing. And there's no profession on this earth where talk is cheaper than in politics. I want to let everybody know right up front, this message today is very personal for me. I feel very strongly about things I'm going to share with you, because I have lived it. This is history that I have lived. I'm not talking about things today that I've heard about. I'm talking about things that I have seen and witnessed for myself. I'm going to try to contain my emotions. I don't guarantee success. By their fruits ye shall know them. This past Friday night, 2 days ago, President Donald Trump, who was elected on the promise that whenever he became president, he was going to drain the swamp in Washington, D.C., went to Huntsville, Alabama, to endorse and support the candidacy of one of the biggest swamp creatures in the entire state of Alabama, Luther Strange. Luther Strange is a neocon, rhino, New World Order, establishment, swamp critter. Mitch McConnell, U.S. Senate Majority Leader, has spent millions of taxpayer dollars that he has at his disposal as Majority Leader of the Senate in campaign ads attacking Roy Moore and supporting Luther Strange. Vice President Mike Pence is also scheduled to go to Alabama to support Luther Strange. Virtually every Washington lobbyist and the entire Washington establishment are doing everything they can to defeat conservative constitutionalist Judge Roy Moore for the U.S. Senate in Alabama. They are all rallying around the quintessential neocon Luther Strange. Since when does a president inject himself into a party primary? Think about this, folks. Presidents typically do not publicly, they may do things behind the scenes, probably most of them do, but publicly they do not inject themselves into a primary election. Whether the Democrat is in the White House and it's a Democrat primary, or whether it's a Republican in the White House and it's a Republican primary, typically they do not inject themselves into the primary election, at least publicly, and hopefully their party will win the primary, in their view, and then they will go into the state and they will promote the candidacy of their party's candidate. That's how it works. But Trump, no. The man who promises to drain the swamp, the man who says he's an outsider, the man who said that he's an anti-establishment, independent populist, goes to a Republican primary election in Alabama to endorse and support the establishment candidate. He then said that Luther Strange would easily win the general election in November against the Democrat, but that Roy Moore would have a hard time winning the general election in November against the Democrat, even though this is typically a Republican seat. This is the seat that was held by the sitting attorney general before he was selected to that position. That's why this special election is being held. Pray tell, Mr. President, why would Roy Moore, who is one of the most popular political figures in the entire state of Alabama, and has been for the last two decades. Pray tell, why would he have a hard time beating the Democrat in November? I'll tell you why he might have a hard time winning in November, because when he wins this primary, and I'm counting on the people of Alabama to see through the phony Donald Trump and elect Roy Moore, a genuine constitutionalist, to the U.S. Senate on Tuesday, and he will be the candidate in November representing the Republican Party. And the reason that he might have a hard time in November is because not only will he have to fight the Democrat establishment in Alabama, he will also have to fight the Republican establishment in Alabama. That's why. I have known Roy Moore for over 25 years. And I don't mean just know of him as a public figure. I've known him as a friend. I've known him personally. I knew him whenever he was a circuit court judge in Etowah County, Alabama. The county seat is Gadsden. I saw the wooden Ten Commandments plaque in the Etowah County Courthouse that Roy personally carved himself, by the way, before he took it with him to Montgomery when he was elected to the Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice position. I was with him when, at the behest of the ACLU and the SPLC, a circuit court judge in Montgomery told him to remove the wooden plaque, which he refused to do. I was with him when, as Alabama Chief Justice, a federal judge ordered him to remove a Ten Commandments monument that he had placed in the Capitol Rotunda, which he again refused to do. I was with him during the trial when Alabama Attorney General Bill Pryor prosecuted Judge Moore for refusing to remove the monument. At least that was the pretense. We'll get to more about that in a minute. I was with him with his family and his staff. Roy asked me to lead them in prayer as we went through that trial. There was only a handful of people that were there. The trial was off limits to the general public. It was not televised. No one from the outside got to see any of the trial. I was there. Roy has spoken in my church down in Florida. I have been with him. I know his family. I consider him a dear friend. And I know him to be a committed constitutionalist and the most dedicated Christian you will ever meet in your entire life. I knew the Alabama governor, Fob James, personally, who had initially appointed Bill Pryor as Attorney General. Fob told me himself, looking eyeball to eyeball, that Pryor's commitment to support Judge Moore was a litmus test to receiving the appointment. I am sharing things with you today that you will never hear anywhere else, because I was there and I know the men. Fob told me personally that if Pryor had not have made a commitment to him, Fob, that he would support Judge Roy Moore all the way. That's a quote. That's a quote from Bill Pryor. All the way, he would not have received the appointment. prior promised fob. Promised fob, James. That he would support Roy Moore all the way. Meaning all the way through the court process, all the way, he would never abandon him. Pryor lied. But he didn't just lie. He was the chief prosecutor against Roy Moore. I'll say it for all the world to hear it. Bill Pryor is a lying, two-faced, double-crossing Judas Iscariot. And Bill Pryor got his 30 pieces of silver for betraying Governor James and Judge Moore in the form of an appointment to the federal bench, which where he is today, by the wretched and evil G.W. Bush. And many conservative Christians still believe to this day that Bill Pryor and G.W. Bush is a good Christian. Barf. Fob James had lion-like courage. I tell you what, if we had a dozen governors like Fob James was, it wouldn't matter to a tinker's dam what happened in Washington, D.C. Those states would be free. Fob James, man's man, one of the most courageous men I've ever known. Almost as, probably as courageous as Judge Moore. I stood behind Governor James on the Capitol steps when he held a press conference and told the entire nation, I was there. I was standing 10 feet behind him when he told the entire nation that he would use the Alabama National Guard and the state police if he had to do so in order to protect Judge Moore's Ten Commandments plaque should any federal police agency try to enforce an order from a G.H.W. Bush federal judge demanding that Judge Moore take it down. Yes, he did. I will protect the right of this justice to keep those Ten Commandments in his courtroom, and I'll use the National Guard of Alabama, and I'll use the state police of this state against any entity that would seek to enforce that unconstitutional order given by that G.H.W. Bush judge. When's the last time you ever heard of a governor doing that? He's the only one I know of. Okay, now I'll give you the back story. After that happened, Governor James was defeated for re-election by a Democrat who, by the way, was later convicted of corruption charges in 1998. How did that happen? The establishment Republicans in Washington had forced Fob into a fierce primary election against a multimillionaire establishment toady. Fob won that primary election, but the contest depleted his financial resources. And he lost the general election. In 2002, G.W. Bush's chief political strategist, Karl Rove, was sent to Alabama to support a Republican lackey for governor who would roll over and leave Judge Moore to the mercy of the wolves. Rove succeeded. With a supporting governor out of the way, Rove helped orchestrate the prosecution, conviction, and removal from office of Judge Moore in 2003. Again, all this was done with the approbation, if not direction, of the, quote, good Christian, G.W. Bush. And guess who is back in Alabama today trying to again defeat Judge Roy Moore? Karl Rove. My point is this. The Washington establishment has been doing everything it can to destroy Judge Roy Moore from as far back as the G.W. Bush administration and from federal judges appointed by Bush Sr. Judge Moore's biggest enemies have always been establishment Republicans. Now Judge Moore is running for the U.S. Senate from the state of Alabama against a neocon, rhino, establishment, New World Order, toady, Luther Strange. And once again, the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, the Majority Leader of the Senate of the United States, and virtually the entire Washington establishment are doing everything they can to defeat this great American statesman, Judge Roy Moore. Judge Moore is a graduate of West Point. He served as a company commander with the Military Police Corps in Vietnam. He was so respected by the men he led that they nicknamed him Captain America. He was a cowboy for a while. He has a black belt in martial arts. He went to law school and got his law degree. He was elected circuit court judge and twice elected Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice. He is a faithful husband, father, and grandfather. He is a Christian in the truest sense of the word. Not just at election time. He's a constitutionalist. He has large portions of the Constitution committed to memory. He takes his oaths to the Constitution seriously. He's a man's man. He's tough as nails. At the same time, I know him to be as kind and as gentle a man as one will ever find. He said no to unlawful demands to remove his Ten Commandments plaques and monuments at least three times on constitutional principles, and twice he lost his job for saying no to the powers that be. He knows how to lose everything for doing right. Roy Moore knows how to fight. And he is nobody's toady. Back during all of this in 2003 and before, I was writing my column. And I wrote quite a bit chronicling all that happened to Judge Roy Moore back there in the 90s and the early 2000s. Let me just read you a portion of one of the columns. And the reason I'm reading this is because in this column, I quote the actual transcript of an exchange that took place under oath Bill Pryor, the Attorney General of Alabama, was the prosecutor. Chief Justice Roy Moore was the accused and the defendant. No cameras, at least not that any could be made public. No one from the outside was able to see the proceedings or hear the proceedings. They were done in total secrecy. You will read about secret courts in Nazi Germany and Mao's China and Stalin's Russia. I was there. My association with Roy Moore allowed me entrance. I heard this exchange from my own ears, and I was able to get a copy of the transcript later on, which, good luck trying to find a transcript of this anywhere. I have it. Here is the exchange I'm referring to between Bill Pryor and Judge Roy Moore. And I want you to listen to this very carefully. This exchange that I've excerpted is only brief. Bill Pryor: Mr. Chief Justice, and your understanding is that the federal court ordered that you could not acknowledge God. Isn't that right? Moore: Yes. Pryor: And if you resume your duties of Chief Justice after this proceeding, you will continue to acknowledge God as you have testified that you would today. Judge Moore: That's right. Bill Pryor: No matter what any other official says. Moore: Absolutely. Without an acknowledgement of God, I cannot do my duties. I must acknowledge God. It says so in the Constitution of Alabama. It says so in the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. It says so in everything I have read. So, Pryor, the only point I'm trying to clarify, Mr. Chief Justice, is not why, but only that, in fact, if you do resume your duties as Chief Justice, you will continue to do that without regard to what any other official says. Isn't that right? Moore: Well, I'll do the same thing this court did with starting off in prayer. That's an acknowledgement of God. Now, we did the same thing that justices do when they place their hand on the Bible and say, "So help me God." It's an acknowledgement of God. The Alabama Supreme Court opens with, "God save the state in this honorable court." It's an acknowledgement of God. In my opinions, which I have written many opinions, acknowledging God is the source, a moral source of our law. I think you must. End of transcript. Did all of you understand what you just heard? There wasn't a word mentioned about the Ten Commandments plaque. There wasn't a word mentioned about the Ten Commandments monument, was there? Did you hear the words Ten Commandments one time in that exchange? What did you hear? Three times. How many times did Simon Peter deny Christ? Three times Bill Pryor said to Roy Moore, "Will you continue to acknowledge God? Will you continue to acknowledge God? Will you continue to acknowledge God? When you have been ordered not to, will you continue to acknowledge God?" And three times, Roy Moore said emphatically, unequivocally, courageously, "Yes, I will." And they removed him from the bench. Pryor was saying that in order for Chief Justice Moore to resume his duties as Alabama Chief Justice, he must not acknowledge God. Posting the Ten Commandments never came up. Roy Moore's crime was acknowledging God. For this, he was removed from the bench. If you ever have the misfortune of having to go to court, I challenge you, if you're ever in court, just request of the judge that you can have a word of prayer before you proceed and see what happens to you. To require that a public official not acknowledge God not only violates the First Amendment to the Constitution, but also Article 6 of the Constitution that says, "No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States." To require Chief Justice Moore to not acknowledge God certainly violates this constitutional obligation. They were requiring a religious test of Judge Roy Moore. Federal Judge Myron Thompson, Alabama Attorney General Bill Pryor have plainly and deliberately violated Roy Moore's constitutional rights under the First Amendment and Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution. I wrote, "For doing so, they should be immediately removed from office and Bill Pryor should be denied appointment to the federal judiciary." But on the federal judiciary is exactly where Bill Pryor is today. Now, what I'm about to say is going to anger some of you. I can't help that. I have had countless people write me over the last 2 weeks and tell me they will no longer financially support me. If I lose every penny of support, if I am no longer able to continue the public ministry that God has given to me and the platform that God has given to me, I swear to you, I will never be intimidated by these people who threaten to not give to my work in order to silence what I know to be the truth. So take your money and do whatever you want with it. Give it to Luther Strange in Alabama. If Donald Trump was remotely serious about draining the swamp in Washington, D.C., he would know that Roy Moore is exactly the kind of man that needs to be in the U.S. Senate. But it is obvious that Donald Trump didn't mean a word he said about draining the swamp or about much of anything else for that matter. Talk is cheap, Mr. President. Even more than his evil establishment predecessor, G.W. Bush, Trump is bringing the entire weight of the White House against Judge Roy Moore. Trump wants another establishment lackey in the U.S. Senate so badly that both he and his vice president are personally traveling to Alabama this week to help defeat Judge Moore. Think about it. Here is a man, Roy Moore, who must be regarded as one of the most courageous men of the 20th and 21st centuries. Here is a man who has actually read and truly understands the Constitution. Here is a man who has proven that he's been willing to take on the establishment elite. And the man who said he wanted to drain the swamp in D.C., Donald Trump, is doing everything he can to defeat Roy Moore and help elect another swamp creature. By their fruits ye shall know them. Don't tell me Donald Trump is a conservative. Don't tell me Donald Trump cares about the Constitution. Don't tell me Trump wants to drain the swamp. Don't tell me Trump is an outsider. Don't tell me Trump is anti-establishment. Donald Trump is just another establishment toady who masqueraded as an anti-establishment outsider in order to get elected. There is no way in this world a true anti-establishment outsider, a true conservative, a true constitutionalist could support the neocon rhino, globalist Luther Strange, and oppose the conservative constitutionalist American hero Roy Moore. No way, no way, no way! This runoff election between Moore and Strange will take place next Tuesday, September 26th. Before Trump went to Alabama, Moore's lead was double digit. Now it's nip and tuck. Anybody's great. Anybody's race. Virtually the entire Trump team in Alabama is supporting Roy Moore. But now Trump himself has gone to Alabama to support Luther Strange. I'm telling you, folks, Donald Trump has taken conservatives and Christians for a royal ride. It's time for Christians and conservatives to snap out of the hypnotic trance Trump has put them in and start taking a good hard look at reality. Donald Trump campaigned, masqueraded as an anti-establishment outsider. But since becoming president, he's done nothing but cater to the establishment. He has expanded the warfare state for the establishment. He's increased federal spending for the establishment. He has filled his administration with establishment insiders. He's backed down on DACA for the establishment. He supports replacing Obamacare with an establishment-backed GOP health care bill that is just as bad or worse than Obamacare. And his massive efforts to defeat Judge Roy Moore and support the establishment toady Luther Strange absolutely prove how disingenuous Trump was during the campaign. We need to be praying for the people of the state of Alabama, folks. We've got 48 hours. They know Roy Moore. They thought they knew Donald Trump. Now their discernment, understanding, and convictions are being put to the test in the most serious manner possible. The people who are supporting Roy Moore also supported Donald Trump. Now Trump comes back to the state of Alabama to support Moore's neocon opponent. How the people of Alabama are going to digest all of this is anybody's guess right now. There are many, many people around the country that truly believe in Donald Trump. They had been convinced that Trump was real, that he was anti-establishment, that he was an outsider, that he was going to drain the swamp. They truly believed that. And in spite of his miserable track record since becoming president, they've still been holding out hope. But I tell you, the people in Alabama who know Roy Moore and who know Luther Strange and who watched the president, their candidate that they elected just 8 months ago or 9 months ago, are now coming back to the state to endorse the candidate, is now coming back to endorse the neocon candidate, Luther Strange. You can imagine the confliction that's going on in the hearts and the minds of the good people of the state of Alabama today. Here is a fact. If Roy Moore loses this election on Tuesday, it will be directly and specifically because of President Donald Trump. Roy Moore would be the most anti-establishment candidate in the U.S. Congress . The only comparison I could make to a Roy Moore Senate seat would be when the great people of Texas elected Congressman Ron Paul to the House of Representatives. It's the only comparison. It's the only comparison. And the thing about it, everybody knows that a senator has tremendous power as one man, unlike in the House of Representatives, where one congressman, unless you're the Speaker of the House or a committee chairman, have the power of one vote, and that's about it. Not so in the Senate. The Constitution and the rules of the House have given a senator power that no other congressman in D.C. has. A senator can single-handedly block legislation, or at least severely cripple it or slow it down. Roy Moore has already proven he cannot be bought, he cannot be bribed, he cannot be bullied, he's nobody's toady. Put Roy Moore in the Senate, ladies and gentlemen, and watch the swamp critters scurry for something to do about it. The establishment hates the thought of Roy Moore going to the U.S. Senate. That's why they pulled out all the stops in a state party primary race to stop one man. Please, I'm asking everyone around the country that's listening to me right now and that will watch this video over the next 48 hours, please pray for the people of the state of Alabama. This is the most historic election, state election, and I can't remember how long, since Ron Paul was first elected. Historic. Monumental. I'm sorry, I will never, ever, 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 I don't care what Donald Trump says, from here until kingdom come, I will never believe him to be anything except another establishment toting. Well, let me give you this. Aside from going to Alabama to try and destroy Roy Moore, Trump told Congress he wants them to pass DACA into law, thus making it permanent. Trump has bombed and killed more innocent civilians during his first 6 months in office than Obama did during his last 2 years in office. That's a fact. I found the information. You can too. Look it up. Trump joined G.W. Bush and Obama in signing the 9/11 War Powers Order, keeping America perpetually at war. All he had to do was just not sign it, and all these foreign wars around the world stop. Nope, he signed it. Maybe you didn't know this. Trump has given the CIA autonomous, independent authority to launch drone attacks at will without military or White House authority and without any accountability, meaning there's not even going to be a record kept of the amount of drone attacks, who was attacked, who was killed, when, where, date, time. No record, no accountability, no approval necessary. The CIA, Trump has given them the authority to launch drone attacks against anyone in the world they want at any time with no accountability. One ex-CIA agent now calls the CIA the world's largest killing machine. That's Trump's doing. Trump collaborated with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to raise the debt ceiling to over $20 trillion. Yes, he did. Don't sit there and try to tell me he didn't. He did. Trump has escalated the war in Afghanistan by sending thousands of fresh troops and committing to extending America's longest war in 16 years and counting now, indefinitely. Trump has appointed more globalist CFR members to his administration than Obama and is fast closing in on G.W. Bush's record number of CFR appointments. Trump is threatening to use military force against Venezuela, a country that poses absolutely zero threat to the United States. Trump railed against Senator Rand Paul for his opposition to the GOP health care bill that was actually worse than Obamacare. Trump has made billions of dollars of military assistance available to one of the biggest terror states in the world, Saudi Arabia. Trump is feeding the military-industrial complex like no president in modern memory. Trump is repeatedly consulting with New World Order chieftain Henry Kissinger. And on, the list goes on and on and on and on. And by the way, stop blaming Trump's cabinet. Trump appointed the cabinet, for goodness sake. They work for him. And turn off the propaganda that tells you Trump's problem is that he's being slowly poisoned and he doesn't know what he's doing. You're watching Alex Jones too much. The links people will go to keep their seats at the king's table is mind-boggling. Here's the fact. If the people who voted for Trump, who say they believe in the Constitution, who say they want to see the swamp drained, who say they believe in the rhetoric that Trump gave us during the campaign, if they would rise up and hold President Trump accountable for what he's doing and hold his feet to the fire on the things he said, you might, and that's a big might, be able to make a difference going down the road. But if you just roll over and go along like a lap dog and continue to support the man when he obviously has betrayed the people that voted for him, that is illogical, nonsensical, and insane. Tell me, what's the difference between the robots in the Republican Party and the robots in the Democrat Party? What's the difference? When the Democrat is in the White House, the Democrat toadies out there, they will look the other way and they will support him no matter how unconstitutional or how corrupt or how dishonest his administration is, right? That's what they do. And then what happens when the Republican goes in? The Republican toadies out there will sit back and do nothing, no matter how corrupt, no matter how unconstitutional the administration is. So tell me, what's the difference? This is not about Donald Trump. This is about the Constitution that he swore an oath to protect, defend, and support, and that he is not doing. By their fruits you shall. What's the bottom line here? I've really meditated on this. What's the bottom line? The bottom line is people, including Christians, are lazy and cowardly. That's the bottom line. By admitting that someone they voted for or someone in their political party is part of the problem, engulfs them with an overwhelming sense of hopelessness. If they admit that Donald Trump is not the man he said he was, and that he deceived us and lied to us, and he's actually working for the establishment, if they admit that to themselves, they are engulfed with overwhelming hopelessness. They really are. I've had people write me expressing that very sentiment. Hopelessness. Why? Why would that give them hopelessness? Why would that engulf them with hopelessness? To admit the guy lied to us. To acknowledge the truth. I feel hopeless because I know the truth. Really? I thought the truth empowered us. Here's why they feel hopeless. Because down deep, they expect the guy who sits in the White House to solve all their problems. That's what they feel. Down deep, he's supposed to fix all the problems. And so when they realize he's not going to fix the problems, he's part of the problem, hopelessness. And the reason for this hopelessness is because they are not willing to face up to their own duty and responsibility. Amen. They want him to do it. Oh, I did my patriotic
duty. I voted for the right guy. Aren't I wonderful? Oh, I'm so patriotic. I voted for the right guy. Your guy was a phony liar. Oh no! It's over. It's hopeless. The power of America was never vested at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The power of America is vested in Main Street, USA. But that requires action. We have a duty. We have a responsibility. If that guy, I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican, if he's not going to fix the problem, oh no, oh no, oh no. You mean I've got to do something? Tell me it ain't so. I got kids in school, I got bills to pay, I got Boy Scouts on Thursday night, and I got PTA, and I've got to do something. Yeah. You're the only one that can save America. Amen. See, we made a mistake decades and decades ago, thinking that it was the job of any president to save the country. Never has been, never will be. They have to face up to a duty and a responsibility they have, and knowing that if they live up to this responsibility intrinsically, then you don't have to tell them, they already know it, it's going to cost them something. And they're not willing to pay the price. Roy Moore lost his position twice for doing what's right. But a lot of these good, patriotic, conservative Christians out there, they're not willing to lose anything for the sake of our liberties. They know they're not willing to pay the price. They know if they take a stand and they do what's right, that somebody at the office isn't going to like them. Or somebody down at their social gathering isn't going to like them. Or at the club isn't going to like them. Or a neighbor isn't going to like them. Maybe even a family member isn't going to appreciate them. They're going to take grief. They're going to take flack. They might lose a job. They will definitely lose a professing friend. I say professing because if they were a friend, you wouldn't have lost them. But you will lose professing friends. It'll cost you something to stand up and do what's right in the face of wrongdoing. Especially when the vast majority of people are applauding when wrongdoing is being done. And they don't want to do it. They don't want to face up to their own accountability. They don't want to get involved. Try to get an average church. This is not an average church. Yeah. Amen. I was wondering how long that would take. Try to get the average church to write a letter to the editor about anything. They can't even write a letter. Try to get them to go out into the community actively won't do it. They want to sit in their comfort and in their opulence, and they want the President of the United States to take care of all the trouble and all the problems in the world. Let me give you some illustrations. If people were truly serious about restoring liberty in our country, they would not be attending these hear no evil, see no evil government corporations called churches. If they were truly serious about restoring liberty in our country, they wouldn't be flocking to these 501c3 establishment cowardly churches all over America. They know their pastor's not going to do anything. They know their pastor's not going to say anything. They know that their church is not going to be engaged in the liberty fight. They know when they go there, when they put their tithe check in the offering plate, they know their pastor and their church are going to do nothing for the cause of liberty. And yet they go month after month, year after year, decade after decade. They're not serious about wanting to destroy, to establish liberty and restore liberty. They're not serious about it. If they were truly serious about restoring liberty, they would not be little robots for either Republican Party, either political party. What difference does it make if it's a Republican or a Democrat? What difference does it make? Have you read? I wonder how many. What do I got to do? Have you read George Washington's farewell address? Have you read this? Have you read it? It's right over there. It's on the store online. George Washington's farewell, he told us all about this. Read what he said about loyalty to political parties. Read what he said about it. What difference? It doesn't matter whether it's Republican or Democrat. Last week I got up here and I gave you the vote record of our two senators here in Montana. Rand Paul, again, a senator who has the power to do something, and Rand's a constitutionalist, and I don't know that I would say Rand is the same as his dad, but Rand's better than anything else we got in Washington, D.C., unless Judge Moore can get there hopefully next Tuesday and then in November. But Rand Paul forced a vote. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to. But he forced a vote of the Senate on authorizing expenditures for the continuation of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. They all had to go on record and make a vote. Guess who voted right? Our Democrat Senator John Tester. Guess who voted wrong? Our Republican Senator Steve Daines. Tester voted against the continuing funding of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and Daines voted to keep them going. What difference does it make? If they were serious about restoring liberty, they would become active in the fight for liberty. They would be active. Liberty Fellowship, if you're serious about helping to restore liberty in this country, when we need your help, when we call on your help, you will help us. Not just sit there. You will help us. I mean, we need help around the fellowship here. We need help in the nursery. You know, it's getting increasingly difficult to find ladies that are willing to help. Everybody wants to stay in the service. Well, of course everybody wants to stay in the service. But do you want us to be able to continue to reach the people through that camera and through this service by helping us with the little ones outside so that we can have the service? I mean, somebody has to step up to the plate and say, I will help, Pastor. We have positions here that are absolutely necessary for this fellowship to be able to continue to go forward in a manner that is effective. Without the work of these people around this fellowship, there wouldn't be a fellowship. Somebody had to come early today. What time did you guys get here? 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock. We started 2. They got here 2 hours early, setting up this equipment, setting up everything that we need to have set up, making sure that all the various rooms that we have rented here in this Hilton Conference Center was right. Oftentimes, most of the time, it's right. Sometimes they'll have activities here and they won't get to it, like today. And then you have to go in and you have to make sure that everything's... Somebody has to come in 2 hours early. Every week. Well, I'm glad they're doing it. And I'm glad it ain't me. They're willing to do it. We all have a part to play. And if there's something that we can do, if there's anything we can do, whether it's large or small, we need to step up to the plate and do it! Come on! People just want to come and sit. And all over America, that's what Christians are doing. They're coming into their comfortable padded pews in their air-conditioned buildings, and they sit. And they stand up once in a while in a song service and raise their hands and praise the Lord, and then they go home and do absolutely nothing to help the cause of Christ, the cause of liberty, the cause of constitutional government, the cause of freedom, the cause of peace. Nothing, 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 nothing! Go to the poll in November, vote for a guy, and, yeah, he's going to solve all our problems. And then something comes up for reality and says, you know what, he's part of the problem. Oh no, all is lost. No, it's not lost. It's where it always was, right in your lap. That's where it's always been. If they were truly serious about restoring liberty, they would pay much more attention to their states and much less attention to Washington, D.C. The power of our constitutional republic still rests with the states and the people. The problem is, the states and the people have surrendered their authority and their power to a federal, centralized government to whom it was never, never given. And now we look to Washington, D.C. to solve all of our problems. And they're not solving our problems for us, folks. I'm telling you, whether it's the Medicare system that we're talking about, whether it's the education system we're talking about, whether it's the culture, whether it's any issue that you want to name, Washington, D.C. is not helping the problem. Washington, D.C. is the problem. We're losing quality physicians left and right because of what the federal government is doing in the medical industry. We're losing good teachers left and right because of what Washington, D.C. is doing in the education system. States have the power to say no. Judge Moore was right. Fob James was right. The state of Alabama had the right to say no to Washington, D.C. And so does the state of Montana, and so does the state where you live, whatever state that may be. You have the right to say no. We can't even elect mayors I'm trying to think, when's the last governor we had? There's been a few, but nah. If they were truly serious about restoring liberty, they'd pay much more attention to the states and much less attention to Washington. If they were truly serious about restoring liberty, they would not shy away from a willingness to lose something for the cause of liberty. What, really? You can't lose anything, huh? Don't want to risk anything? Can't lose a friend? Really? I don't have near as many Facebook followers today as I had a week ago. I purge my Facebook followership every once in a while. And I've done that over the last couple weeks. Because I've told the truth about Donald Trump. I had one guy threaten me the other day. If you don't stop this, if you don't stop criticizing Donald Trump, you're going to become a nobody, and nobody's going to listen to you, and you're going to lose your fellowship, you're going to lose everything. I might. If I do, I'm still not changing what I believe is true. I will rather go to the poorhouse believing what I believe is right than live in a mansion being a phony and pandering to what I know to be wrong. But, and by the way, this is not a recent decision on my part. I made this decision years ago. Years ago. So his little, and I told him so, your little pathetic attempt at intimidation doesn't work here. Take it somewhere else. They're not willing to risk anything. If you're serious about restoring liberty, you'll take your responsibility seriously. You'll do your job. You'll be active. You'll be engaged. And if it costs you something, so be it. What's more important? If they were truly serious about restoring liberty, they would not continue to support civil magistrates from either party that are unfaithful to their oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights. It's as simple as that. I voted for Ronald Reagan in 1980. I did more than that. I traveled the state of Florida and other states campaigning for Ronald Reagan. I was directly responsible for registering over 60,000 first-time voters in the state of Florida for Ronald Reagan. I personally registered over 60,000 first-time voters for Reagan. Many of the local elections offices around the counties of Florida hated my guts. I'll never forget my old friend Joe Old Mixon. He was a Democrat. He'd been elected and reelected, oh, I don't know, 30 years? He was just one of those guys that everybody liked him. He was honest. He was fair. He believed in truth, and He was a Democrat. And I was, man, oh man, was I catching heat. Because I was registering all these people that were going to vote for Ronald Reagan, and Florida was a swing state, and blah, 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 blah. And so many of these people were Democrats. And Joe called me up one day and said, "Hey, Chuck, you got a minute? If you're in the neighborhood, stop by my office." And so I said, "Sure, Joe." So a few days later, I went in, and he was in a wheelchair, and he comes out, and back to his office. He shakes my hand and says, "Man, I just want to tell you, keep up the great work. Man, I really like you. You've got grit, man. I just think you're doing a great job. Just keep it up, man." Little Joe. Good guy. What difference does it make? What party? Our responsibility is the same as the civil magistrates. Our responsibility is to protect, preserve, support, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights and make sure that our liberties are protected thereby. That's our responsibility. If we were truly serious about restoring liberty, we would not continue to elect and re-elect and elect again and re-elect men and women that are unfaithful to their oaths to the Constitution. It's very simple. You know, they can tell us anything they want. Oh, I meant to finish that story about Reagan. I did all that campaigning for Reagan. But as Reagan went on in his presidency, he got worse and worse. And he wasn't doing what he was elected to do, and he wasn't stopping the growth of government and the size and the scope of government, and he was doing many of the same things that the establishment predecessors before him were doing, and I called him on the carpet for it. Just because you vote for somebody doesn't mean you have to be a robot for that person for the rest of their political existence. They don't own you! They work for us. We don't work for them. If they do right, support them. When they do wrong, nail them. If they don't hear from people, I mean, yeah, the Democrat, hang on, I'll be done. Okay. You know why the left, Hollywood, and all the... You know why they're so anti-Trump? You know what's got their dander up? You think it's, you know, because Trump is this great model of conservatism and, you know, outsider and not... That's not it. You know why they can't stand Donald Trump? Two reasons. One, his immigration policy, which now we know it really wasn't an immigration policy to begin with, but they heard the rhetoric and they believe the rhetoric. They don't want to lose all their cheap labor. I mean, I'm sorry, that's it. They don't want to lose all of their cheap labor. And number two, Donald Trump beat their darling Hillary Clinton. They adored her. They loved her. And he beat her. And they hate him because he beat Hillary. It's not about all these issues that you're thinking about and all these things that you think are so important to you. That's not what they're thinking about. They didn't like his immigration policy, and they didn't like the fact that he beat their darling Hillary Clinton. They're mad. They're mad, and they're totally, absolutely irrelevant. They're irrelevant. The only people that pay him any attention are their buddies in the mainstream media. Nobody cares about what Barbara Streisand thinks about anything. You got a pretty voice, Barbara. Sing your songs and people will like you. Start blabbing your ignorance and your stupidity and people know what you are and they don't care. That's why. So even though I campaigned for Ronald Reagan, and even though I supported him, and I was the leading individual in the state registering voters for him, even though I did all that, as he began to betray the Constitution, the conservative principles that he campaigned on, expand government, expand war, etc., etc., I was calling him on the carpet just like I would do if it was a Democrat. When Bill Clinton was in office, I told the truth about Clinton. When G.W. Bush was in office, same thing. Barack Obama, same thing. You think I'm going to stop now because it's Donald Trump? And I have to tell you, this has been a defining moment. His support for Luther Strange to destroy Judge Roy Moore is a defining, in my, I told you this was personal. In my mind and heart, this is a defining moment. This is a Waterloo. This is a Valley Forge. You don't come down and try to destroy the most principled, honorable, decent, manly, Christian, statesman, constitutionalist, and then turn around and tell me that you're an outsider and you're anti-establishment. I'm sorry, Mr. Trump. Never again will I let anybody tell me that about you. Folks, please pray diligently for the next 48 hours for Roy, his wife Kayla, their family, the many people that are working their hearts out to get him elected, people that are listening to the most unbelievable slander and attacks, incessant, day and night, television, radio, newspaper, door-to-door attack against this man. If you were the people, if any of you are watching in Alabama right now, you know exactly what I'm talking about because you're living right smack dab in the middle of it. And I just want to tell you, you're living in the middle of perhaps at least one of the most crucial, critical elections in U.S. history. You're living it. All we can do from the other 49 states is pray for you. And I hope that we'll do that. If Judge Moore loses, it will be because of Donald Trump. If Judge Moore wins, it'll be because of God and the people of Alabama who saw through Trump and who know the man they're voting for. Let me close with this. On the day following the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to hear Judge Moore's case, thus paving the way for his removal from office, which took place 9 days later, by the way, I wrote a column that ended with these words. Listen to this. I wrote this on November 4, 2003. November 4, 2003. Here's how I ended that column. The bright side of all this gloominess is that, like Daniel of old, no matter how much treachery is brought against Roy Moore, God is still with him. The greater the attacks become, the stronger he becomes. Beyond that, the door that God allows to be closed to Roy Moore today, November 4, 2003, the door that God allows to be closed to Roy Moore today will only serve to open an even larger and more influential door tomorrow. The tomorrow I predicted for Roy Moore is here. And I know God is with him yet today. I pray, and I ask you to pray, that the people of Alabama will be too. Let's stand for a word of prayer.